Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Thursday morning here in the Music City. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. We are social distancing show number 6. I'm down here in Rutherford County. Willie is representing the east side. Chase over on the west side. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. Got a chance to see Scott Van Pelt talk with Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred last night. He has vowed that they will indeed come back. Today would be opening day, and we've got Kirk Casale on the line with the Cincinnati Reds catcher. When you think of opening day, you have to think about the Reds. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that tradition has been longstanding. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Well, we're hanging in there, man. We're in unfamiliar territory. And so we're just trying to get by.
No kidding.
What was it like for you guys? Just kind of walk us through. You know, it was interesting. We just had Kermit Davis on last hour, and they played Wednesday night. The SEC tournament played on Wednesday night before it was all canceled. And we had Joe Fisher on a couple days ago. Vanderbilt was the last game played before they shut it down. We had Tim Brando on yesterday. He was calling the Big East game at Madison Square Garden when they called it at halftime. So we've kind of gotten different perspectives of what it's been like when kind of all this started. Kind of track that for us on your end.
We went in, we were out in Goodyear, Arizona, and I can't remember what day it was exactly, but they had a scheduled game for that afternoon at 1. I wasn't scheduled to play because I played the day before in Salt River Fields against the Rockies. And, ironically, it was raining, so the game got canceled before we ever had any meetings about potential postponement of the season. And, we're watching MLB Network, and while our game has gotten banged and all this stuff is going on, the Pirates and somebody are still playing out in Bradenton, and we're watching the game being like, man, this is going to be the last game we're going to watch for a while. And we couldn't believe that they were actually still playing based on what we have been hearing and rumblings. And, we had a scheduled meeting with our owner who was in town, Bob Castellini, Dick Williams, Dick Crawler, general manager. And I think when we heard those names, especially when our owner, Bob, was in town, we kind of looked at each other just like, this isn't good. They had a 30-minute conference call with all the major league teams and Commissioner Manfred, and I'm sure Joe Torre was on the line. But they came in to the locker room afterwards. Everybody in the whole organization was in there, and they didn't have a whole lot of answers, but they just said, the season is postponed. They're looking at 2 weeks for April 9th, but they weren't really comfortable saying that as a definitive date, but. Everything just kind of happened so quickly after that. And as soon as the NBA, postponed their season, we knew we weren't far behind, and now we're all dealing with this thing together.
Yeah. So what have been kind of the marching orders for the athletes? Yeah, because it seems like every league's had kind of like different way, self-quarantine, you can't go home, now you can go home. So what have they said to the players?
Obviously, they can't really instruct us to do a specific thing because we're not there together. I have somebody from the organization texting me every morning, making sure I'm okay and healthy, and just kind of keeping tabs on each member of our team and our organization. So that's cool. So me and my wife are doing okay. We're spending a lot of time at home. I really don't go outside very much. I might. Get in touch with Sonny Gray and go play catch with him every once in a while, but it's there really isn't a whole lot of structure right now, and that's why we're just in uncharted waters right now. We're just trying to be safe. you know, obviously baseball is important to me. It's important to my livelihood, and you know, I know there's a lot of fans out there that want to be safe, but also they want sports, they want entertainment. I'm one of those guys as well, but we kind of have to put that on the back burner for now, and you know, take care of the world as opposed to, you know, our entertainment options as of today. So I'm trying to do my part, and by not doing anything, basically.
Yeah. Kirk Casale on the line with the Cincinnati Reds catcher, former Vanderbilt player. And when you hear some of the things that came out of that interview and some of the things that are kind of being floated out there publicly, my guess is a lot of this is getting out just to kind of see what would be the fan reaction, the media reaction. When you hear, you know, possibly neutral site games for the playoffs or seven-inning doubleheaders. I mean, everybody's, like you said, everybody – at some point, everybody's going to want sports back big time because, I mean, this is all difficult and weird and strange, but you also have to be realistic about it. So when you hear some of the things being floated out, Kurt, what do you think as a player?
I know a little bit more than what's being floated out there, and unfortunately I can't tell you everything, but okay. Some of the ideas that are floating out there are, you know, have some merit to it. I'd say the general thing that the players and the owners want is for us to play as many games as possible. It's how we make our full salary. It's how the, you know, the owners make payroll. It's how they make money over the course of the season. And so, like, those are two things that we really, really want to happen. But in terms of all the other ideas and the ideas of, you know, the playoff expansion and, you know, neutral sites, those are all ideas just to make sure or give us the option to play as many games as possible. This is not going to, you know, roll over into a further season, I mean, at least for the next 2 years, because we're still under a collective bargaining agreement for the next two seasons, but we have to get creative for this year. I mean, we want to play. We don't want this season to go to waste. And if it takes, you know, different playoff formats, if it takes playing into November, December at a, you know, warmer weather field, then, you know, it's not ideal, but none of this is ideal. Nobody wants to be doing anything we're doing right now. We just kind of got to go with the flow and see what's available to us. But I'll give props to the, you know, Major League Baseball and the Players Association for trying to hammer this thing out. And, you know, hopefully we have some answers from the CDC soon that will give us a general, you know, idea of when we could potentially start playing. And then that could lead to some, you know, more clarity in terms of how we are going to attack this regular season and playoffs for 2020.
We're talking to Reds catcher Kurt Casale here on 102.5 The Game. And, Kurt, as you float that out there, one of the things that we were discussing earlier in the show was an increased amount of doubleheaders, potentially, to try to get more games in. Back in the day, there were a lot of scheduled doubleheaders a long time ago, and it was a lot easier. Pitchers were more apt to throw seven or eight innings in a start than they are now. But what would that do? You said, you know, sometimes you just have to take drastic measures here. I know there's been concern about the strain it would put on pitching staffs to have too many. But what would be the right amount if you played more doubleheaders?
I love the way college does it. The 2-7 inning back to back doubleheaders, I think, is just a genius idea. Honestly, when, you know, it's kind of, you know, back in college we would sometimes, you know, act like Bull Durham and like, We would love a rain out. Like, you just, you know, you're tired, you just want a rain out, and you're just, and they were like, well, you got to play 2-7s. We're like, bring it on. We love that. It's significantly easier than a day-night doubleheader with 2-9s in the big leagues. If they would, you know, be willing to go that route, I would venture to say that the players would be on board just in terms of, you know, a durability issue. In terms of how, you know, pitchers would get worn out. Yeah, they probably would, and they would have to they'd have to think about making some roster expansions. I think you know, we agreed to go to 26 players per roster this year. I don't see if they had to condense the schedule, limiting our off days. I don't see how that number could be right. So whether they add, you know, a another player, another or two players to that. I mean, it definitely will alleviate some of the strain. But the doubleheader thing, I think players would get on board with if they would go with the 2-7s idea. The 2-9s is kind of difficult. You know, I know, you know, the old saying, "Let's play two," is famous, but it's definitely not something that we look forward to, because it, you know, you play two games in a day, it takes you a few days to recover from that, honestly.
I don't know if you saw your compadre Sonny Gray throwing the ball up against the pitchback. I don't know if that's over in Smyrna at the house he grew up in or something. He could have called you up, I guess. You guys could have had a catch. But how long do you think it would take, Kurt? Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
So how long do you think it would take, when you get the green light, whenever that is, to be able to ramp back up? Because as you said, it's tricky how you work out. You can't get in together in big groups, and everybody's at home. You're trying to do what you can and be safe at the same time. So what's the right timetable to ramp back up so that you're ready to play a regular season game?
Well, I mean, at the point that we were just at, so what was that, 5 weeks of spring training, I think we were at, 4 or 5 weeks. I think the pitchers were about at like 80% full, if you will. Like, so they were 80% of the way there. So, I mean, realistically, if each pitcher was able to, you know, continue throwing and, you know, maintain a similar level of endurance and, you know, arm strength, that would lessen the time. I think they're trying to cover the bases for people who don't have the access right now to, you know, a catcher or a facility that are, you know, not being able to work out their arms. I would say that at a minimum, it would take 3 weeks to ramp back up, and that's not for really a position player's perspective. It's solely for pitchers, and you know, that's why spring training is as long as it is anyways, so the pitchers have time to get their arms loose. And you know, if it were up to the position player, we'd be ready to go in probably a week and a half of spring, because everybody shows up to spring training ready to go now, and it's just one of those things we have to deal with. And I'm just thankful that I am not the one that has to make these decisions, because these are tough calls, and I can't even imagine what's going on in these conversations between the PA and the you know, Major League Baseball, because it's just havoc all the way around. But you know, hopefully they're able to come up with some decisions and you know, some clarity real soon. But I'd say 3 weeks minimum is what we would need to at least prepare properly for a season. That way nobody gets hurt.
All right, let's get nostalgic for a fun one here. What was opening day in the Casale house like growing up? Who was your team? Who did you watch? What was it like on opening day?
My favorite team growing up was the Atlanta Braves. I, you know, at the time, the TV deals weren't as lucrative, so there wasn't many teams that had, you know, that were on regularly. So we were watching, we were watching TBS, and we were watching the Braves play. And, you know, my favorite player of all time is still to this day Chipper Jones. I will say we didn't have like a celebration or a party for opening day, but I was always really excited for the baseball season to get going, because it was kind of a sign of spring is here, you know, warm weather and, you know, the boys of summer getting back out and getting after it. But I used to love watching Chipper Jones, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Sondra Jones, you know, back in 95. It just, like, that was the year they won the World Series. And you know, David Justice, Andres Galarraga, like, those guys I looked up to. And it definitely was an exciting time to, you know, get baseball season going on. And, you know, today would have been opening day, and it just sucks, because Cincinnati is incredible on opening day. It's absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything like it. The parade is insane. It's, you know, the whole city shuts down. It is a city holiday for Cincinnati. And, you know, I just feel bad for, you know, the city of Cincinnati. I wish I could experience it again. And hopefully whenever this season starts back up, we can, you know, get to experience it again, because I know when we do, that city of Cincinnati will definitely open their hearts to us and come out and support us the way that they, you know, the way that they love to do. And we can't wait to see them again. It's just such a shame that today should have been the day and it's not.
We're talking to Kurt Casale, Reds catcher, of course, played college ball here in Nashville at Vanderbilt. And your new teammate, Trevor Bauer, before everybody left and they had just started the postponements and all of that, he had a sandlot game. And I know you kind of have to get creative with all of this to try and stay interacting with the fans, but it was also to raise money. What'd you think about that?
I think Trevor has a lot of great ideas. He he's a very interesting guy. He's become a good friend now that I've started to play with him. But he actually owns his own media company, Momentum, and he puts out content regularly. He, has kind of self-charged himself with the responsibility to grow the game. And by doing that, he has made this media company. They put out content all the time, and he never shies away from opening himself up to questions, criticism. I think it's really, really impressive. And that sandlot game was kind of a cool idea. I mean, it was also cool. My other teammate Derek Dietrich was there, and he hit a bomb, and he popped his chain. It was pretty funny stuff. But he's all for it. I think if you follow him on Instagram, he's honest. He'll tell you exactly what he's thinking, whether it's right or wrong in whoever's eyes, but he's been a real treat to get to know, and I'm glad to have him on our team. And I think he'll be huge to keep fans engaged over the next few weeks, months, and up until we have actual Major League Baseball games.
Did you see, Kurt, the Real Sports piece on him on HBO?
No, with what, Brian Gumbel?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was last month, so maybe it was like February. May have been February's edition, but it was pretty interesting. We talked about it on the show. She said he's got different beliefs and thoughts, but he also backs it up with, you know, what he believes are his facts and his own analytics. And it was interesting to hear him talk about, you know, how he doesn't ice his arm and just all the different things he goes, you know, he goes about things in a different way, as you know.
I think he's ahead of the curve, honestly. He was the one – you know, when he was debuting with Arizona, I'm sure you guys have seen the clip of him doing, you know, the extensive pregame routine. He's throwing from foul pole to foul pole. He's got headphones in. He's doing body blade. And he's got the heavy plyo balls from driveline. And now all that stuff is completely normal. That is routine. It is par for the course. There, a lot of people do it. With that being said, I would imagine he's got some other ideas that are going to become routine and normal coming up, and so that's why I listen to him. I mean, the guy's a trendsetter, and he certainly started that trend in terms of arm care, and I think the next step for him or his next goal would be to pitch every fourth day. I think he wants to eliminate a fifth starter. He wants to pitch more, and because that'll increase his value. He'll make more money. He can be, he can contribute to the team more regularly, and that's just another one of the ideas I think he's going to come out with. So I would stay tuned on that guy because he's got more coming down the pike.
Kurt, do you think that with, you know, all this downtime, and you mentioned what Trevor Bauer has done with his media company and different ways to stay engaged, that now it's going to that could grow the game in different ways and add new ideas even when baseball resumes, and it's more than just MLB Network showing old games? Like, I know NASCAR has done, the drivers are playing each other on video games. I've seen that with some other sports. Do you think that kind of changes the way of thinking?
It might, honestly. I think one of the reasons why baseball lacks in terms of fan interaction, or let's just call it, online communication with fans and, whatever, it's because we play every day. We play games every day, and there's not a whole lot of opportunities that many players are willing to go out and put themselves out there just because we're constantly getting ready for another game, and so on and so forth, as opposed to, you know, maybe the NBA or NFL when they, you know, NFL's got a week between games. NBA's got, you know, I know they play back-to-back sometimes, but, you know, they play half of the amount of games that we have. So they have the time to do it, and they do it really, really well. Like, they've created such an incredible platform that, you know, everybody, if you walk into, you know, a restaurant, you know who those NBA players are. And you know, the saying goes, like, you wouldn't know Mike Trout if you saw him, you know, at a regular gym or you saw him at a restaurant. It's just the way he carries himself. He's just different. He doesn't do that. And I'm more like him than anything, because it's uncomfortable for me to put myself out there a lot. But the time now could create some momentum for the sport, because it's all we have to do right now. And I haven't quite jumped on board with it yet, but, you know, I might try pretty soon here. But if we can, you know, create, you know, an avenue that brings fans and players together through this pandemic, that could be, you know, one solid, incredible thing that comes out of it. And if we don't, you know, at least try to do it, then, you know, then that's our own fault. But we should be more willing to, and I should be more willing to participate in that type of activity, because it can make a real difference in the world and the sport.
No doubt. Kurt, we always enjoy the visits. We'll get through this all together, and we'll be talking about sports again soon enough. Thanks for doing this, as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Stay safe, guys.
You guys be safe, yeah. Kurt Casale, Cincinnati Reds catcher, former Vanderbilt player. Always good to catch up with him. More of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Kurt Casale. Yes, today would be the opening day for Major League Baseball. Look, whether you are hardcore or not, even if you're casual, I would think most sports fans paid attention to a day like today. And Kurt spelled it out correctly. I mean, yes, Ryan Porth, he gets excited every day for Reds baseball. But in fairness, they haven't had a good run here of late. They're trying to come back. I like their roster. I like what they're building. But they do have the tradition. I mean, there is no doubt. You heard Kurt Casale. I mean, he perked up when talking about what opening day is like in Cincinnati. And the Reds do it up. I mean, they always have, right? It has always been kind of their thing. And,
they always had the first game for a long time.
For a long time, yeah. They did, yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know why they went away from that. They should have kept that tradition. That kind of bummed me out when they went away from that. You guys agree?
They're the oldest. Is that right? They're the oldest team? Am I right in saying that?
They are. They are the oldest
they're
team.
They're the oldest team?
Now, I know the Braves are the longest running team.
They were the first baseball team.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So that would make sense, right? I mean, they sure should. They honestly, a day like today should be their day. If we were under normal circumstances, it should be. The spotlight should be on them like it used to be all the time. And it still would be, but it's kind of been lost in the shuffle. Quite honestly, I brought this up before. This is kind of a strange deal. Like, baseball has kind of changed the way, I mean, they for such a long time, they did kind of the Sunday night thing to kick off the season, and then Monday would kind of be the start of the Major League Baseball season. And to have it on March, I want to say the 26th, on a Thursday, I don't even know what is their tradition right now, because I feel like they've been kind of changing it up, and it's been on Mondays, now it's on Thursday, and it's earlier than I can remember it, so I don't know what their plan is, their vision for opening day, if this is what it was and is going to be moving forward. But I was confused from the get-go of what they were doing with the start of this year's season.
Yeah,
which no longer is in play.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now it changes everything, because it's not today. But yeah, I'm this is where the traditionalist comes into, of April 1st, to me, that should be you know, somewhere around there should be opening days. It's weird having opening day in March. But, I mean, look, it's I know it's only by a few days, but now, of course, it doesn't matter. But that's just kind of where – because my dad would always tell me stories of going up to Cincinnati. His best friend lived there, and he would go up just about every year for opening day for the Reds and experience that. And it was always April 1st or right around April 1st. And that was when you knew baseball was here. So I like that, you know, I would like to see them go back towards more of a traditional way of doing it, but I also understand times change. Now we have replay in baseball, so that shows you that times have changed.
Anything stand out?
Times do change, and of course, I'm usually the last guy, right on board with some of this stuff. Did you, for some of the things that he threw out there, what jumped out at you? It sounded like
I can tell you what jumped out at me
on some of these.
Yeah, that's what jumped out at me is there's been obviously a lot of discussions that we don't know about.
Yeah.
That he said that he's been privy to that wasn't comfortable talking about publicly. And I'd love to know what that is. I would absolutely love to know kind of, you know, because right now it seems like what's being floated out there the most is they're kind of eyeing a June return for Major League Baseball. Even though there hasn't been any announcement, that's what seems like, I don't know. That's what I gather from it and hearing some of the words, Manfred. And
if it's now, June 1st, I could get on board with that.
Yeah. That's what
I'm supposed to be in L.A.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's true. How does that work? Would they just pick up where they, you know, where they were supposed to be on the schedule? I don't know. I don't. Obviously, there's a lot of logistics that would have to play out, but you know, this whole notion that they're going to – and I get it. Everybody wants to get paid and revenue, and everybody understands that. But just to – I've said all along, like, to me, what's realistic is this season's going to be – if I were playing the range game, somewhere between 80 and 100 games. Anything past that in my book seems unrealistic. That's just how I feel. I don't know if you guys feel differently.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I agree with you. You don't know how the picture is going to change, but I think these next few weeks, as everybody's been saying, it's so critical. You know, if we can start flattening that curve, start seeing the results and start catching up with testing and the medical equipment, all the things that you're seeing every day on the news, it's so important. That's going to affect, you know, how quickly we can start getting back to doing those things. And because as we know, it's, you know, this is, we're getting into some scary stuff right now, especially in certain areas of the country. And a lot of people think that, you know, it's going to go in different paces at different places. But eventually everybody is going to have a wave come through, and how we handle it and how we prepare ourselves for the next few weeks is going to be critical, because everything is going to be affected by it.
I saw last night where a lot of the leagues, the European leagues and leagues overseas and hockey have all canceled everything. Like, they're done. They've shut it down. Like KHL, Swedish league, I saw, you know, everything in Europe, they've said it's been shut down, but they're saying, hey, we're not coming back for the season. Like, there's not going to be any more. We're done. Did you guys see that?
Yeah. I did see that. And I glanced at an article about the NHL that somebody wrote, I think it was for ESPN, to go ahead and just cancel the season, but I haven't gone through and read it yet. But look, I have a feeling that we're going to approach that at some point, especially with the NHL and the NBA. But I, you know, as I brought up with you guys during this entire conversation, and Kurt kind of alluded to it, I think this is an opportunity for all of the leagues to rethink some things and to experiment. And because you have the excuse now that you can do it because you have to, that it's a necessity. And so they might determine in all of this, whether it's a 100 game or 80 game schedule, something like that, that, okay, maybe we can get by with reducing the number of games that we play in a season. Maybe we can get by having more doubleheaders. You know, maybe we can expand the rosters and it be okay. So I think it gives them opportunity to do some of these things that we have always spitballed, you know, as sports talk hosts over the last few years. And it might turn, you know, they might look at it and go, huh, we should have done this a long time ago. So I think that's exciting. I think that's a good opportunity and an exciting one.
See, I'm not sure I'm all in on that. I'm not ready to go gimmicky, but told me that they were able to get, I've seen some articles where they're throwing all kinds of little things in there, what they might try just because of the circumstances for this season. So I don't know. I would be hesitant to make a lot of changes based on that. But I mean, I've just got my fingers crossed that they have a semblance of a season. Like you said, Darren, if they got half of the season in, I'd be great with that. That would be awesome for me, because I think it's not a guarantee that they get all those in there. So what would that be? July would be, you know, right around the halfway point, right? If they got going by July 1st, they could probably find a way to maybe get 100 if they tacked on some doubleheaders in there.
If July 100, I don't think so.
You would have to tack on some doubleheaders and maybe extend it.
Are you talking about ending at the normal time, or are you talking about extending? Because you're not getting 100 in starting in July.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a lot of doubleheaders, probably.
Which that you know, and Kurt brought up a really good point with that. And then, you know, we as fans want to see 2 9-inning games, because a 9-inning game is a game, not 7 innings. And that's what we're used to. But I do think it's interesting to hear a player's point of view of, okay, we'd probably be more inclined to do it if it were 2 7-inning games, because that's less wear and tear. You know, that's, you're taking 4 innings off of that. So that's something that they could look at. But at the same time, you know, you get together and go, all right, we were going to expand the rosters to 26. Why not 30 to help with some of that? And can schedule doubleheaders in. And there are a lot of things that they'd have to get in a room or on a conference call and talk about, and all be on the same page.
It sounds like they already are doing that.
Which is good.
These kind of conversations. That is good. And having the players have input is probably a really smart thing too. I was a little bit surprised to hear him say that. I think people would go for the 7-inning games. I you know, from a tradition stats standpoint, like, the 7-inning games happen all the time at all levels of baseball, right? The Sounds played 2 7-inning doubleheaders all the time because of rain, right? Every year that happens. But Major Leagues has always stuck to 9, and for this reason, right? Let's say that Sonny Gray goes out there and pitches in a doubleheader, a 7-inning game, and he throws a no-hitter. Would that be... I guess that might be considered.
So what if he throws
a perfect game? So that's a no-hitter, but you would have to note that in baseball history, right? That it was a 7-inning game as opposed to 9. Because there have been some guys, I think there's been like a rain-shortened no-hitter in the past.
Yep.
But you have to make that notation.
Yep. I thought that was interesting. That is something else that jumped out to me, is how much he was in favor of going back to college and in the minors, the 7-inning doubleheaders.
Well, because he looks at it from a different point of view than we do. I mean, he's got to actually go out there and do it. And for a catcher, I mean, that's tough to do. Now, I know he wouldn't catch both games, but if, let's for instance say that you're going to do a Saturday and a Sunday, and it's the Reds, I'll just use this as an example. It's the Reds and the Braves, and they got to get a 4-game series in, and so they decide that they're going to do 2 doubleheaders on Saturday and Sunday. Well, Kurt's probably catching 2 of those. So in 2 different days, so nothing really changes for him. But you have some position players that would probably have to play maybe 3 of the 4, and in 2 days, I mean, that's tough. So I get it from that standpoint of, you want to think about that, and what if it goes to extras, and you have all those different things that you have to factor in. So I can understand from the player's point of view, while I may not like it as a fan, because I feel like I'm getting robbed of a full baseball game, I do understand that from the player's point of view.
And the other thing is, when you play the 7-inning doubleheaders, it's usually coming off of a rainout, as he kind of referenced, right? Okay, we get the day off, we get the day of rest, you come back with 2 7-inning games. In this situation, I would think that the number of days off that would be scheduled would be pretty small, right? You just can't schedule a lot of days off for a lot of teams. I'm sure the players would be up for that, but that will create, you know, a real stress, wear and tear, especially on pitching staffs.
Yeah, I'll tell you something that I've been thinking about a lot, guys, and I understand that, you know, logistics and takes a lot of money. But here's one thing that I don't get, why there's not more of a push in these markets, and there's been a lot of new stadiums built in cold places, and yet they don't have the roof. To me, unless you are in, and they even have it in you know, Miami and the nice places, because it can rain anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's a nice place. I don't know why baseball doesn't push for retractable roofs everywhere in their sport. And the reason I bring that up is because they're the longest season by far. We know that. They have got the most to try to cram in a certain amount of time. And to me, you don't need, as we've figured out, we don't need to keep dragging things out and dragging things out. If you had everybody where you knew the games were always going to be played and you never had rainouts, there's no sport that needs that more than anything, right? Because they are at the mercy of weather, and they spend the longest time. I mean, 162 games. It can be affected so much by weather. I don't know why they don't all push, and why these new stadiums in cold weather places, why they didn't build roofs, and so it would never be affected. And guess what? If it's a nice, beautiful day, then open that sucker up and enjoy it. If it's a crappy day, which happens a lot, especially in the Northeast, then shut it. I mean, I don't understand why Florida and Texas and those states, which have much nicer weather, have roofs, but yet up in the North, they keep building outdoor stadiums for baseball.
Well,
that's just me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like City Field and Yankee Stadium, I guess, would have had the choice to build a retractable roof. There's obviously a big extra cost in doing that. But I was thinking back to the early 90s when you had the first real big wave of the baseball-only parks like Camden Yards and then Jacobs Field and Coors. Nobody really thought, although the Sky Dome was there, right? They were the first to build the retractable roof in Toronto, not as aesthetically pleasing, but now you can kind of have it all, I guess. I would guess maybe the next wave has more retractable roofs, but it is amazing in the history of baseball, we're going back well over 100 years now, they more often than not get all the games in, right? There's weather that's been going on for years, and they still find a way to get 162 in there most of the time.
I know, but once again, we talk about, you know, games that, you know, finish up at 1 o'clock in the morning because of a 2-hour rain delay. I mean, it's already being punished because of how long it is, and we talk about that all the time. It's so hard.
It probably hurts your day and age, right? And those April games in Cleveland that are really, or Chicago, you know, that are really cold.
You wouldn't worry about it.
And
it's
going to kill your game.
Right.
Your gate.
Yeah. They get games snowed out in April. Like, that's, to me, I don't understand. Like, Minnesota, like, why did you build Target Field, but build it with a roof, a retractable roof? Like, why on earth did you build a beautiful new stadium and you're in Minneapolis?
I never understood that one.
I don't get it. I mean, I don't understand why baseball doesn't, why they haven't figured out, like, you're going to have to spend the extra money and just build a roof, and we'll never have to worry about rainouts, delays, cold weather. We can just have it. And by the way, it doesn't matter when the World Series is because it's not going to be affected by weather. I've never understood that. I've been thinking about it even more, especially in these times, because, you know, you're trying to cram, and Mother Nature's still going to come into play no matter when they start, and you're going to lose out. I don't know why baseball doesn't push for all their places to have roofs, and you never have to worry about weather again. That's just my two cents.
Sawyer agrees with you. Just heard
he does?
Him there.
I didn't hear a bark.
Yeah, he agreed.
Or a howl.
He came in and barked.
Okay.
When you were going on that. Here's another part of this that I'll throw out, and we can discuss this on the other side if you want to. And I know you guys might push back on this, but hear me out. For so long, you had cities that, and Cleveland was one, Cincinnati was one, where you had a baseball team and a football team share a stadium. And it didn't work because of the, you know, how they constructed the stadiums. I mean, they made it work, but it was weird, and you had the donut shape. But with technology and the things we know now, don't you think that we'd be better equipped to pull that off in a city like Nashville? If Nashville wanted to get a baseball team, that you would have to design a stadium that way to house both.
To house both?
Yeah, like if the Titans in Nashville come out and say, "Hey, we're going to build a new stadium. It's going to be a retractable roof," but they design it in a way that it could house a baseball team. And with technology the way it is, and
I've been saying that for a long time. I've never seen anybody come up with a plan where it would be good sight lines for both. Right? Usually, you have to give up something in the sight lines for one or the other or both. Really, I mean, I went to a lot of games at Shea Stadium. It was certainly not the same as going to Yankee Stadium when I was a kid in New York, because Yankee Stadium was built for baseball.
Right.
The sight lines were perfect. No matter where you sat, Shea Stadium, depending on where you sat, you were sitting sideways because, you know, the field was just laid out very differently because the Jets were playing there for a long time. So I've been saying this for a while, Chase. You're echoing what I've been throwing out there for years. I'd love to see an architect in this day and age maybe come up with a way to do it.
I mean, look at some of the stadium designs.
I think it might be possible now.
Yeah, look at some of the stadium designs we have for football and baseball. I mean, I feel like that. There are people smart enough that could pull that off.
I as long as they could pull it off, because I don't like the setup.
Nobody liked the donuts. I know that.
No, I'm saying, no, it's not even really the donuts. It was more like a lot of the times, I guess I would cite probably Miami and Oakland when they were sharing those dual stadiums. Like, you know, foul territory, you could run and run out of breath. You could run so far. You know, I'm like, you don't want that. Like, that's the uniqueness of a baseball stadium, right, is being right on top of the action. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, it would take, obviously, really smart people to get in there and figure out a way to do it where it could still feel like you're on top of the action, even though if you configure it a different way, it can turn into a football stadium. I don't know. There's a lot of smart people out there that do this for a living, and I don't know why we haven't seen anything, because maybe – they have figured out it's just too difficult. I don't know.
Well, if you can hit a button to open and close a roof, why can't you hit a button to reconfigure the seats?
Yeah, that's a good
right,
question.
Right, Sawyer?
He agrees. Sawyer's completely on board with this.
He is.
Willie, tell us about Lee Company.
All right, I'll do that. And Lee Company, of course, beautiful day today. They'll be out. You'll see the vans heading around town doing their work. And 615-567-1000 is the number to call for Lee Company. They have the home maintenance plan I tell you about. When you think long term and you are a homeowner, we're all doing this from our homes here, it's good to be top of mind. You know, we've certainly got time to take a look and stuff and go through closets and clean things up, go down to the basement, spruce things up. It does remind you that when you look over at your plumbing system and all those pipes that run through your basement, or you look at your central furnace, you know, these things need servicing from time to time, and Lee Company will be on it with routine if you're part of their home maintenance plan. 615-567-1000, or go online at leecompany.com. Find out about all their great services with their general maintenance plan as well. Even their renovation and home improvement team, they can help you with that as well. And they will be right there front and center at Bridgestone Arena the next time the Predators are in action at Smashville. They're a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators. Lee Company. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Basketball coach, former MTSU basketball coach, so we appreciated him joining us. We will have our own version of Nashville Athletes in our bracket coming out on Monday's show. We're excited about that. You heard Kirk Casale this hour. You're going to hear a really good conversation with Dennis Kelly, who is re-upped to hope to be the starter for the first time really in his career, and everybody feels like he has earned it, and it is a really good conversation with him to kick off the third hour of the program. Elliot Freeman, his normal chat, weekly chat on Thursdays with us at 1 o'clock. And then we're going to discuss an article in The Athletic a little bit later in the third hour with Mitch Light as well. Speaking of the Titans, guys, I was reading this article in Sports Illustrated, and it was John Elway, the general manager for the Broncos, and he was being interviewed about their moves in the offseason and the trade for Jarrell Casey. And in his words, he feels like that trade for them was a steal. He is beyond pumped for their move for Jarrell Casey. They said Jarrell Casey, trading him at defensive tackle position that we needed, and a steal, a very, very good player, a five-time Pro Bowler, for us to be able to trade just a seventh-round pick for him. We felt very fortunate. Now, Vic Fangio is the head coach, and the offensive line coach for the Broncos is...
Michael Munchak?
Mike Munchak. And why is what's the significance of that?
All I heard was line coach because it blipped there for a second. I was like, I think he means Munchak.
Yeah, Mike Munchak. I blipped?
Yeah, everybody blipped. Might have been me.
You blip, I blip, everybody blips. Yeah, what's the significance of that? That's when they drafted Jarrell Casey. Mike Munchak was the head coach, so I'm sure he played a part in that as well. So they are extremely excited in Denver to get Jarrell Casey for a seventh-round pick. And, you know, certainly it took us by surprise. We discussed it. Just giving up a seventh-round pick for Jarrell Casey, we know it's much more than that. It was about freeing up money. But yet, since that trade, I think that has a lot of people wondering, okay, what did you free up that money for? That's what we're all waiting for.
Right, and we still don't know that answer. And...
Nope.
No question. And I think too, they are going to get a really great version of Jarrell Casey for a while. The question is how long? He's got, 3 years left on his contract? I think it's more what happens at the back end of that for a while.
Yeah. Well, and I think the really good version of Jarrell Casey they're going to get is a pissed-off version, and that is always – a factor with a player, because I think he's looking at this of why did they sign me to a contract extension? I believe it was just last year, and then trade me, and you know, there's some hurt there. I mean, you get that all the time, and he's already a motivated player, but you know, he was somebody that we talked to him at training camp that said went through a lot of losing, did a lot of lean years here in Tennessee, and so he was one of those guys that helped build this thing to where it is now. And so I think there's a part of that, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to be motivated and help this young Denver team win.
I think you're right, Willie, on especially the first year. I don't think there's any doubt that he'll be extra motivated. But you do wonder long term. But still, look, if Denver gets two fantastic years and then all of a sudden he kind of hits a wall or starts declining, it'll be worth it to them. I mean, they obviously had cap space, and they were more than willing to take on that salary, and they're going to get the guy that you just heard John Elway say, a position of need, and all they had to do was give up a seventh-round pick for a position of need. They still have almost $22 million in money to play with, so they had a lot of money to begin with. So for them, you know, it's a win. I hesitate to say it's a win-win for both, because we don't know what John Robinson was freeing up for. You know, what is he aligning himself to do? Is he truly for Clowney or Logan Ryan, and he's just waiting for the price to keep coming down, and so he can lock it in at the price he thinks is the right price? Or is there something else? I don't know what something else would be. I mean, what else out there would, at this point, with all the moves that have been made, would make you think John Robinson is working on fill in the blank? I don't know what else it would be.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be one of those things. And it's a gamble, because right now, they don't have anything to show for it. Now, John Robinson probably knows a lot more than we do, that there could be something, you know, it could be a lot closer than people may think and all of that. But it's a gamble. He knew that he'd have to clear the space, or maybe he thought he was closer to Clowney or somebody else, and then all of a sudden, you know, another team comes in and changes up the negotiations. But he knew he had to clear the money. He had to make the move in order to be able to do whatever it is he's planning, but we just don't know what that is yet.
Well, here's another one to consider. It's in under the category of John Robinson knows certainly way more than we do about all of the ins and outs of this. One thing I wonder is, the physical, the injuries that Jarrell Casey has had and the wear and tear, you know, what does that project over the next few years of his career? You know, he's one heck of a football player, a tremendous competitor, all of those things. But if, you know, if the play has started to decline a little bit because of the injuries and the age, then that's something you have to look forward at. And again, it's the trade him a year before he really starts declining rather than a year too late.
Yep, so we'll see how it all plays out. I think right now everybody at the time was shocked and said, okay, that means there's a big move coming on the Titans' end because that's what they're doing, but we're still kind of waiting to see what that big move is because right now you have to look and say their defense is not better than what it was last year. I don't know how anybody could make the case that it's better than last year. We come back, somebody on the offensive side of the ball, Dennis Kelly, is a happy camper. He told us he's more than happy to be back here. In fact, he's going to talk about learning of in Philadelphia, getting the opportunity, what he thought he was walking into here in Tennessee, and what it is today and what it means to him and his family. A really good conversation with Dennis Kelly to start the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.